Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Through expert advice and tailored solutions, Busey helps homebuyers achieve the dream of home ownership. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 7th day of November. I'm Todd Gleason, traveling today, so no updates of the commodity markets, but we do have a great show for you. Coming up, we'll talk about what could be the disconnect between the weekly crop progress report updates during the growing season and that first corn yield, and soybeans for that matter, that were released by the United States Department of Agriculture in August. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, studied that and came to some conclusions. I'll give you a hint. He doesn't think they're that far off. In fact, that they're within the range, according to his study. We'll also take a look at the soybean to corn ratio and what it tells us about the last 4 years and looking forward into year number 5, as soybeans have been more profitable than corn across much of the Midwest and certainly in Illinois. We'll do that with Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist. On those coming back to those weekly crop progress reports, we'll check in with the state statistician to see how harvest is progressing across the Midwest. And as we close out our time together today, we'll look forward to a Thursday webinar sponsored by U of I Extension that is targeted to local officials in rural counties of the state, along with members of the EMS system, doctors and nurses and others in healthcare. I'll tell you how to get yourself set up to listen to that during the noon hour as it relates to the opioid crisis across the nation. And we'll do all of that on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, again, as a reminder, I'm traveling today to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, so no update of the commodity markets and the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago. However, do visit our website at willag.org. We're 2 weeks away today from the Farm Assets Conference, scheduled for Normal, Illinois on the 21st. That's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. If you have not purchased your tickets yet, do so right now at willag.org, willag.org. farmassetsconference.com to see all the details, or by calling 800-898-1065. Again, that number is 800-898-1065. Don't delay. Buy your tickets now for the Farm Assets Conference, 2 weeks away from today in Normal, Illinois. Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really, thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with 5 other voices, Joe Vaklevic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzolo. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night, or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. WillAg.org. We think it's one of the most comprehensive places that you can find information about markets and weather and agricultural news. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for listening.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, now joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on campus. He's written a new article for FarmDoc Daily. It's called Narrowing of the Gap on Corn and Soybean Crop Revenue. Gary, simply put, over the last 4 years, soybeans, by the calculations you do, have been more profitable for Illinois farmers than corn. Why is that the case, and what do you explore?
That's correct. Soybeans have been more profitable than corn. Part of the reason is the cost increases that have happened, but another reason is that the gap between corn and soybean revenue has decreased. And just to give you a feel for that, from 2014 to 2017 in Illinois, soybean revenue was 0.82 times corn revenue, or 82% of corn revenue. And the 6 years before that, or from 2006 to 2012, it was 0.72. So we've seen an increase in corn, soybean revenue relative to corn, and that contributes to the higher soybean profits that we see relative to corn profits.
So let me ask this question, because you just told me it was 82%.
Yep.
Is it actually more profitable than corn? It depends, I suppose, on how you're measuring the profit here.
Yeah, so it is. So we've seen soybeans to be being more profitable than corn since 2013. And yes, soybeans have been more profitable in the state than corn. In this case, we looked at the revenue difference between that. So it was, what does the revenue contribute to that difference? And it has been substantial. One of the things that we've seen is that soybean to corn prices have been relatively strong for the soybean since 2013. And, you know, the ratio of soybean to corn prices was 2.74 since 2013, and it was 2.42 before that. So we've seen soybean prices increase relative to corn prices.
Let me ask this question. Has this happened in the past, and does that give us an idea of how long it might last into the future?
So we've seen in the past, soybean and corn have roughly the same revenue, and that happened in the late 1980s. So it has happened in the past. I think we're going to continue to see soybeans at least as profitable to corn for the foreseeable future, and part of what's driving that is the continued strong demand for soybeans exports. So we have this growing demand for exports of soybeans. So as long as that's there, we're going to be continually trying to pull acres into soybeans.
Does it tell you anything about crop rotations in the state? Maybe how they've already changed, if they have, and what changes farmers might consider?
So if we're looking at rotations, you would want to see them more corn soybeans than heavier corn, because if anything, as we go heavier corn, we're going to have a yield drag for more corn. So going corn soybeans, and we've seen that trend, particularly in the central part of the state, less so in the northern part where we have more corn than soybeans. So In some cases, we're seeing people look at soybeans after soybeans, and whether we have cases where that might be more profitable than corn after soybeans.
The northern part of the state, especially north of I-80, has long been heavy into corn after corn, whether that's 2 years of corn and 1 year soybean in its rotation or just continuous corn. Should they consider going to a 50-50 rotation?
Yeah, it would seem to, given what we've seen, going to more soybeans and less corn would seem to make sense from an economic standpoint.
Across the state, where do we stand today? Is it 60-40?
60-40 is roughly the percentage, and coming down from there, 55-45 would be where we're heading more and more towards.
And it's heavily weighted to corn in the northern part of the state. What's their rotation look like?
So they would be closer to 65-70% corn.
And in southern Illinois?
It's roughly equal, maybe even shading more towards soybeans, particularly when you consider double crop soybeans in that mix.
And then central Illinois must be 55-45.
Yeah, so we're central Illinois has been moving more and more towards a 50-50 rotation over time.
When you talk to ag economists from other states or from what you've seen from other states, is Illinois unusual?
So if you're looking at east of here, Indiana, Ohio, they grow more soybeans than corn. Part of that is because they've seen as good of yield soybean yields as we have here, but less so on the corn side. If you go into Iowa, you're looking at, if anything, more heavy corn rotations and soybean rotations.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, of course, is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He will join us, by the way, for the Farm Assets Conference 2 weeks from today in Normal, Illinois. And you can ask him about that subject, but he and Dale Latz will be taking up something completely different during the day that I think you'll find of great interest. They've been studying for the last couple of years, and they'll have more data soon from the 2017 crop, 50,000 acres, and the conservation practices that are being used on them. And by that, I mean things like no-till and cover crops and reduced tillage, or in, well, conservation tillage for that matter, and actually conventional tillage too. He'll go through the economics of each of those and how they pay or don't pay and what you can use maybe in your own operations, or a way to benchmark your operations as compared to what other producers are using on their fields. It should be a great day in Normal, Illinois. It's the Farm Assets Conference, our fourth annual event. I know you're busy in the field still, but please do get your tickets today. Get pre-registered, because we need a really pretty good count on the number of people that will be coming or planning to come if they're available, and I think you should be. You can do that at 800-898-1065. That number again, 800-898-1065. Or online at willag.org, at willag.org, or find all the details at farmassetsconference.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows around the nation 70% of the crop has been harvested for corn. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 83%. 90% of the soybeans have harvested. The rolling five-year average is 91%. 91% of the winter wheat has been sown. That's the same as the rolling five-year average. 75% of that crop is up. It's normally 77%. And 45% is said to be in good condition, 10% in excellent condition. Now here are updates from around the Midwest.
This is Brad Medlock. Dry weather for most of the week allowed Iowa farmers to make good progress with harvest during the week ending November 5th, 2017. A wide variety of activities were performed during the week, including drying and holding grain, baling corn stalks, tillage, and applying manure and fertilizers. 67% of the corn for grain crop has been harvested, 9 days behind the five-year average. Moisture content of corn being harvested for grain averaged 17%. Farmers in all 9 Iowa districts have completed harvest of over half of their corn for grain crop, with southeast Iowa farmers leading the way with 77% harvested. 92% of the soybean crop has been harvested, 3 days behind last year and 6 days behind average. I am Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Last week's weather was cool across all of Illinois and drier than normal in most locations. Producers were able to harvest corn and soybeans, plant winter wheat, and also do some fall tillage and fertilizing. Corn harvest reached 83% complete, up 10 points from 1 week ago, but still 8 points behind the five-year average. Northern and eastern parts of the state are lagging behind in corn harvest progress. Soybean harvest is now 92% complete across the state, compared to 94% 1 year ago and 94% normally. Harvest progress is 85% or more complete in all areas of the state. Wheat planting moved forward by 14 points and is now 90% complete, 2 points behind 1 year ago and steady with the five-year average. 73% of acres have emerged compared to 70% normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, reminding all farmers and ranchers that the Census of Agriculture is coming this December.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office. Despite cold temperatures and accumulated snow, Minnesota farmers were able to harvest 22% of the statewide corn acreage during the week. Corn for grain harvest advanced 22 percentage points but remained 12 days behind the 5-year average, and that is bringing the total harvest to 60% complete. Corn moisture content of grain at harvest averaged 19%. For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Scott Irwin, ag economist. He's penned an article, along with a couple of other agricultural economists here on campus, about the weekly crop progress reports on our own programs. We talk about these a number of times during the year and how they're tracked by brokers and analysts and the trade, ag economist as well. This year's been more controversial than others, especially as it relates to the yields that have come out from USDA's crop production numbers. You took a look at these weekly crop reports, what they predict and what the crop production numbers are this year. Is there much of a deviation from one to the other?
It's always a matter of perspective, Todd. There is deviation, but not a deviation that's way out of the ordinary. And I think that's the key take-home from the work that I did. And I think that's the key point.
But meaning it's not out of the ordinary, is it on within the range? But what's the range like? For instance, what's the range in corn?
Right. In corn, if we know the end of the season condition ratings for corn in the U.S., the best you can do is get within plus or minus 5 bushels of the actual in terms of predicting based on those crop conditions. And we're within that normal range based on the last estimate in October from the USDA on corn. So we're still within that range. And even if we go a little bit higher, it's not going to change the overall picture that there's nothing in the data that said something radically, dramatically went wrong with the condition ratings this summer.
And there's not as much angst about the soybean number, but was it within the range too?
Yes, the same thing. Basically the same kind of story. But in particular on corn, a lot of people are just simply having trouble in kind of their minds and what they see in certain areas, making 2 and 2 add up to 4 in terms of here's my local weather conditions, here's some yields, and you hear reports that it just seems like the yields were a lot better than they should have been. It's kind of the anecdotes that you hear.
Yeah, so the late start to the season, highly variable in the way the crop came up. But did the weather in the summer months, which seemed to be pretty hot and dry, except for August, really change things?
It's interesting. And we have to be always, of course, careful talking about averages over a wide area and over a period as long as a month. But that's traditionally how we kind of benchmark weather conditions. And at least on average across the Corn Belt, precipitation and temperature during June, July, and August of this last summer were surprisingly close to average, except for a very beneficially cool August. We were more than 3 degrees below average temps in August. So that was the only thing that was unusual about the averages. Clearly, there were some spots, parts of the Corn Belt at different times of the summer that got really dry. That's very clear that did happen. But we also know that these areas managed to, none of them had what we would call a terrible drought, except perhaps an area of northern Missouri, southern Iowa really did get pretty well torched. But other areas got just enough rain to kind of keep going, and we didn't get hot temperatures in most areas. So that combination gave us a good solid crop. But part of it is, the story also, Todd, is it was a good crop, even though you could say, well, how can you just say it's a good crop when we had the second, looks like we're going to have it, the second highest yield? Well, that's where trend and detrending comes in. If you look at the current estimate of the corn yield versus the trend, it's, you know, barely in the top 20 crops that we've had in terms of deviations from trend in the last almost 60 years. So good crop, but nowhere near the really monster yielding years like a 94.
Interesting, because you put that panel up in the Farm Doc Daily website article, and folks can go see it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You did the same thing for soybeans. There's not as much angst, again, about the soybeans, but the soybean crop is a really good crop.
Exactly. And that's what's interesting. The controversy is raging about corn, but once again, I find what's going on in soybeans much more interesting. Another crop, close to a top 10 deviation from trend, and that's even a debatable way to measure deviation from trend, because in my article, I now have the soybean yield trend as an upward curve. And so if you just made it linear, it would be one of the top deviations. I mean, it's second highest soybean yield ever by a wide margin. So if we're looking for a place where something seems to be going on that we don't understand very well with regard to production, it's still in soybeans rather than corn.
Are there any non-data specific identifiable reasons you think that this year's weekly crop progress reports have been of concern?
I think an important issue related to this controversy over crop conditions this summer is social media. In that it amplifies anecdotes and it amplifies the dramatic. And so in other words, can find myself getting caught up in this, you know, Twitter starts passing around pictures of burned up cornfields, or you hear a bad yield report. Well, we have almost somewhere around a million fields in the U.S. corn belt of corn and soybeans. And when you have 10, 15, 20 reports, you really don't know anything. But social media has a way of kind of amplifying and over-exaggerating those things. And so that's why the article that I wrote, I think, is important. You don't have to agree with all of it, but it's stepping back, looking at the aggregates and saying, okay, what did the data show? And I had to go through that myself this summer. I got up for a little while swept up in, oh, the crop isn't as good as the data says it should be, because I think I was paying too much attention to Twitter.
One final question as it relates to your study and the data. Most of the trade during the growing season only considers the good and excellent categories. Did you do the same, or did you consider from very poor to excellent?
Very good question. We use a very simple model, like most people in the industry, of just adding the good and excellent together to build our model. I'm doing some research right now with a graduate student and another faculty member where we're trying to test if there are better models. So far, haven't had much luck in finding a model that beats the simple one, but we're still working on it.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Always a pleasure.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist located here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Bittersweet Chocolate with Almonds Day. The cultivation of seeds that produce chocolate date back at least 3 millennia to Central America and Mexico. The earliest documented use was around 1100 BC, with the Maya and Aztecs making bitter chocolate beverages. On this day in agricultural history in 1807, Tom Brassey was born, an early English railway contractor. He built railway lines worldwide. He laid tracks in England, France, the Netherlands, Italy, Prussia, Spain, Canada, India, Australia, and South America. In all, he built more than 6,500 miles of track. In 1872, the Mary Celeste sailed for Genoa from New York with a cargo of 1,700 barrels of alcoholic spirits. The ship was found abandoned near the Azores, the captain, his wife and daughter, and seven crewmen missing, and no sign of violence. The captain, his family, and the crew were never seen again. In 1923, Michael Joseph Owens died. He is credited with the invention of the automatic glass bottle-making machine. And in 1928, Norton David Zinder was born. An American biologist and molecular geneticist, he studied a species of salmonella and discovered how genetic material is transferred from one bacterial cell to another by the means of a virus. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The ninth day of November, that's a Thursday, the U of I will host a webinar on the opioid crisis targeted at local government officials and their understanding of opioid use in rural America. Nancy Wadrago is with the U of I and here now to talk about the opioid crisis webinar. Thanks, Nancy, for taking the time with us. What do the stats look like for the state of Illinois?
Well, the Illinois Department of Public Health, who our speaker for the opioid crisis webinar is from IDPH, but their data shows that 2,278 drug-related overdose deaths during 2016 happened, and this represents a 44.3% increase as compared to 1,578 drug-related overdose deaths that were reported by IDPH in 2013. So it's been an increasingly dire reality for rural Illinois, and there are now professionals out there that are looking at opioids specifically. A lot of those are prescription drugs, and we might not realize who has the addiction, who has the problem, but it's an increasing problem in rural Illinois.
Who are you targeting with the webinar?
We are targeting local government officials, also community leaders. We've also reached out to community outreach or public information officers, those who work in public outreach in the health sector. So community health workers that might be employed by hospitals or even the EMS county system, the countywide systems. So we're thinking that as vital partners for local officials, those professionals would also be interested in tuning in to maybe bring their knowledge up to date and see what roles everybody can have together to address the crisis.
So this isn't to develop solutions exactly. Is it about identification?
I think that the webinar is more just informing the public of all of the moving parts of this epidemic in rural Illinois. I don't know what prescriptions our speaker is going to give at the end of the webinar as far as first steps to take, though that is supposed to be one of the main goals of the webinar, is that she will explain what she thinks treatment and recovery looks like for rural Illinois.
How do you register?
You can search Illinois Extension, LGE, and you should go to, it should take you to our homepage, our local government education homepage, where there is a short description and a link to register for the webinar, and it is free.
And are they available after the fact so people can tune in and listen to them later?
Within the 2 to 3 business days following the webinar, there will be a recording that people can listen to.
Nancy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Nancy Wadrago is a community and economic development specialist for University of Illinois Extension. If you'd like to join the opioid crisis webinar scheduled for Thursday, the 9th day of November, you can do that online at extension.illinois.edu. Just search for the letters LGE. That stands for Local Government Education. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.